Thank you very much. I'd like just first of all to read a few verses from Scripture as we look at the topic of caring for the carers. And first of all, from 1 John chapter 3, verses 2 and 3. Dear friends, I'll start at verse 1. How great is the love the Father has lavished on us, that we should be called children of God, and that is what we are. The reason the world does not know us is that it did not know him. Dear friends, now we are children of God, and what we will be has not yet been made known. But we know that when he appears, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is. And those of you who have read John Stott's book, The Cross of Christ, will notice there the emphasis that he made from these verses on the now and the not yet. And as we look at the business of caring for the carers, and particularly with some of the theological emphases that are more part of our own scene these days, I think it's worthwhile emphasizing that we are wounded healers, that we are on a road towards wholeness. Some of you may have come across Henri Nouwen's book, The Wounded Healer. It's a beautiful book which, if you haven't read, then you should read. And we are wounded people, moving towards wholeness in some degree, never quite getting there until we reach that time when we are utterly transformed as we pass into the presence of God. And something of the experience of this is perhaps also emphasized in Paul's second letter to the Corinthians, one of my favorite passages, when he says in chapter 4, verse 7, "But we have this treasure in jars of clay, to show that this all-surpassing power is from God and not from us. We are hard-pressed on every side, but not crushed, perplexed, but not in despair." And if we go back to 2 Corinthians chapter 1, you get some idea of the fact that sometimes they were under such great pressure in verse 8, far beyond our ability to endure, so that we despaired even of life. And I think that these verses reveal something of the pressures of Christian ministry which were part of the experience of the Apostle Paul. Now, as we come to the topic which I've been given, caring for the carers, my mind goes back to a year ago when I was asked to speak to the Association of Christian Psychiatrists, a body which I didn't even know existed before I was asked to go and speak to them. And I was asked to go and say something about spiritual depression from our own experience over the last 5 or 6 years, which I did with great trepidation. After I'd done my bit, which was fairly early on in the program, the psychiatrist who was to follow came up to me afterwards and said, "Thank you, you've just covered 50% of my talk." I must confess to something of the same feelings this morning. The psychiatrists have had their revenge. In actual fact, I think that what we'll end up with is something that is complementary and hopefully a blend that will be helpful. I'm going to look at three things this afternoon. First of all, we've been asked to say, why Care for Mission, which is the particular organisation that I'm working with. And secondly, I want to look at the sort of problems which one sees arising in pastors and carers. And thirdly, to look at some of the dilemmas in providing care for those who are in caring pastoral roles. So that's what I'm hoping to do this afternoon. What I'd like to do first of all then is to say why Care for Mission. And in doing that, I want to also just say what it is, because some of you may not know. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, then obviously it will be at cross purposes. Perhaps we could just have the lights out at the back. There are two switches just beside the door, if somebody can just switch those off, right beside the back door. 1976, I'm sorry about the dim level, at least we haven't got the sun. I was praying that the sun would go behind the back. 1976 saw us going to Tanzania to work at this place, Kilimanjaro Christian Medical Centre, where I went as having completed registrar grade training to be a medical specialist at this consultant referral hospital. And that 6-year period from 76 to 1982 was a period of immense learning for us, as we learned to cope with a new culture, settling into a place where we were aliens and had to come to terms with a culture which was completely different. and learning the richness of learning, of working under national leadership, something that missionaries very much have to be prepared to do and must do and will learn from if they don't. So that was part of our experience. Dimly you can see in the back of this picture one white face, and the expatriate has got to learn to be in the background, and that was part of our experience as well. And then there was the business of other expatriates. We found that the Australians and the Americans are different to the British, and the Dutch and the Germans and so on, and there was a great learning process to go through as we learned to live with other people who were from different European cultural backgrounds. At a domestic level, there were the problems of supplies and coming to terms with a completely different selection of domestic essentials and shortages and so on. The Marmite that is here in the corner was smuggled across the border by a Sikh patient of mine who thought we might like it. At the same time, working in a developing country can be unsettling in terms of the political stability, the degree of violence that is around. For instance, at one point we had a slip trench in our garden protecting us from air attack by the Ugandan Air Force during the Tanzanian liberation from the regime of Idi Amin. And then there were health risks which were new to us, mosquitoes now being a major health risk, and since we left even more so. And the problems of coming to terms with the fact that in a developing country, some disease problems occur more frequently and may claim the lives of those whom one loves. The surgeon who is facing us here in this picture died at the age of 42, Ian Hume Moyer, a great man from New Zealand, who died of severe hepatitis, leaving a wife and five children, the youngest of whom was two, an entirely preventable disease, and going through that, being involved not only for his in his medical care, but in his burial and committal, had a major moulding effect upon us as a family. Then there are the problems of coping with things like singleness and marriage relationships, which may be more serious issues on the field. This is my wife, Liz, and another part of our experience overseas was her major illness as she developed a pituitary gland tumour, which gave rise not only to an unusual endocrine syndrome, but to, along with that, to a fair degree of depression, which doesn't show up in this slide. And that depression had a major impact upon ourselves as a family, as we came back in a very disordered and rather broken up state, an impact on our own marriage relationship, which is put under enormous pressure by this particular illness, and during the time of her surgery, which we thank God was totally successful in removing the tumour. And so one of the things that we learned as a result of being in missionary work and also involved in local in ministry in our local church is that those involved in Christian ministry are ordinary people. The secretary who made up this slide got it wrong. It should have been ordinary people in very big letters, which doesn't appear on this. I'm going to get it changed. But we are ordinary people called by God to go and work in situations to which we are sometimes, where we are sometimes subjected to enormous pressures. Now, for ourselves, there came the point in 1982 where we left, and you can see the expression on the children's faces here as they cope with leading people who have become very precious to them. So we left all that, took our last view, perhaps, we don't know, of Mount Kilimanjaro through the window of the plane, and arrived back in the UK. And our experience there had been of both the successes and failures of living out this picture, which depicts a verse in Galatians 5, I think, carry one another's burdens, for in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. Perhaps it's Galatians 6, somewhere around there. And that was our experience, is also our experience as we were back in UK during the time of my wife's surgery, that our own needs as a family were only dimly appreciated by those with whom we had contact. And it was, in fact, after we moved back to Tanzania that I myself particularly received the help that I needed in rebuilding a marriage relationship which, as I said, had been under enormous pressure. What emerged after we came back was not something that we chose. It's partly Mr. Still's fault. He made an off-the-cuff remark at a wedding that we were at, and it arose out of a quite extraordinary series of circumstances where we ended up setting up a residential centre in the Scottish borders to provide care for those involved in full-time Christian ministry, particularly emphasising the needs of those who are in missionary work. Sometimes all of these things may work together, and you'll notice that the missionary there has come by Aeroflot. That's the final stress factor to which some expose their missionaries on leaving a foreign country. And sometimes all of these will work together and provide the care that's needed, and sometimes they won't, because the levels of skills, the insights are sometimes not there. And so we sought to set up something which would try to attempt to meet the needs of people as whole people, looking at both medical, psychological and spiritual factors. And we found ourselves within about 7 months of arriving back in rural Berwickshire on the B6355 in a rather odd-shaped house called Elam Lodge, and setting up the service that we have here. It's based on a number of different buildings where we are trying to provide both residential and outpatient care. And a good deal of time and effort has gone into trying to provide places where people feel cared for in terms of the physical surroundings that are there, both in two flats and in a cottage in which there are similar facilities. And also medical facilities in the administrative block with all the normal things that are associated with that, coming back to Monty Barker's assertion that we should have the right kind of facilities for the right kind of jobs. So what are we seeking to do? Well, we're seeking to provide a medical service, which ties in with my own background in hospital medicine, travel advisory service, immunisations and so on, to look at the disease factors which are common in the developing world. And I won't go into that one, it's a bit dim. And then providing psychological assessment for candidates, serving missionaries and clergy and full-time UK Christian workers, and counselling for those in those categories. And if when we have problems arising, one of the questions that are in our minds are, what were the triggers? Was it stress? Is there depression? Is the cause a past difficult relationship? The sort of things that tie in with what we have already been hearing this morning. If it's a marital problem, is it that the husband is so engrossed in his work that he sometimes has no time for his wife and family? We heard all about the overinvestment, and my wife would probably say amen if she was here today to that. And then we've tried to do some things as far as prevention is concerned, educational seminars, consultancy and so on, providing seminars or organising them anyway for people in these kind of categories. So that's basically what this service is about, and I hope that way, in describing it in those terms, I've maybe communicated something about the why it was set up. Why was partly arising from our own experience and because of the things that were laid before us as we returned to UK. Now I want to move on to look at the problems which arise in our experience in carers. And the first thing that I want to say is sort of summarised in this overhead. And I had a little bit of a problem with the term spiritual depression, which seems to be a marriage of things from both biblical and psychological viewpoints. And I would see, I don't like the Greek model, which you have there above, which is one which you often find in some Christian books of spirit, mind and body being a sort of a tripartite view of man. I don't like that, and have found some support from that from George Carey's book, I Believe in Man. And I would see the spiritual dimension as being the relating of all that we are to God. And in one sense, all depression is spiritual depression, can be seen in those terms. So moving on from there, what are the sort of things that we have been seeing as we've had something around 350 people referred over the last 6 years from a whole variety of different denominational and missionary society backgrounds? Well, first of all, you'll see my liking in my youth for Simon Templar. There is the baggage which we take into life. We all carry baggage of one kind or another into our Christian vocation and ministry. This is just touching on the things that Monty Barker has been speaking about this morning. An innate tendency to depression or mental illness, current losses or bereavement, and I'll come back to say a little bit more about those later on. And childhood trauma and deprivation, and that's something which has been a real education to us over the last 6 years. And not only the trauma, but the deprivation. It's not only the things which have been positive insults, but the lack of warmth that there may have been in parents, the lack of care and attention, the cool, distant parenting, which perhaps has been a feature of the generation which came out of the Second World War, with all the emotional repression that that conflict would have forced upon people. Now, I want to say a little bit more about those innate problems and how important they are, and relate this to the missionary scene first of all, and just say something about the work of Dr. Marjorie Foyle, who over the last 20-odd years has been doing psychiatry in a missionary context. She's not published this work, but she has presented it, so I feel free to do that today, and it is her work. And as she's looked at missionaries, one of the things that has come up very strongly is that the problems which arise in missionary service, and I think this is true of Christian ministry wherever you are, that a substantial proportion of those problems are pre-selection problems. 53% of those whom she saw had pre-selection problems which had emerged on the field. And in 59 out of those patients, about 59%, it had been lifelong. In 26%, it had been from going on for a considerable period of time, 10 to 20 years. 11%, it had been 20 to 30 years. So these kind of problems have a major impact on the way that we actually function in our Christian ministry. Now, following on from that, I'd like to just introduce you to the results of a survey which we have just done, and the results of this are only partly analysed, but this is the part analysis of this particular survey. We did a survey recently in a large UK interdenominational Bible college, 194 students, 103 felt able to respond to the questionnaires, and there were questions. It was completely on an anonymous basis. The questions were looking at events in the past which may have had an impact or may be having an impact on what on the problems of those who are going into Christian ministry. And if these figures surprise you, then I think it serves as a reminder that society has changed. We've had that emphasised this morning. So in 26%, about a quarter, felt that there had been severe parental quarrelling. 16%, that's lower than the national average, had experienced parental separation, and in 9% of those there had been divorced. 10 students knew of a parental extramarital affair, or of at least one parental extramarital affair, which would obviously have an impact on the previous the figures in that line. There, a number have had bereavements in childhood. We've heard about the impact of that this morning. About 10%, 11% had been physically abused, either by parents or by another person. And 10 students have been abused sexually by a non-parental adult. None of these students have been abused by a parent, although, of course, we know that that happens and have had people referred in whom it has happened. And in some cases, it was a sibling or another child who had been the perpetrator of the sexual abuse. About 21 students have been involved as children in criminal activity. About a fifth have had severe childhood illness. About two-fifths of students reported premarital sexual relationships. And in one-fifth of the total, they had had two or more sexual partners, and four had had isolated or regular homosexual intercourse. One student had been raped. Three out of the 38 female students had had an abortion. And 8 students had used drugs of addiction, sometimes some isolated and some regularly. And 5 students out of the total of 103 had made a suicidal attempt. Now, when I showed these figures to a clinical psychologist with whom I work in the infectious diseases unit in Edinburgh, he said, well, this is really very encouraging. Your students are clearly in touch with today's society. And I think that that's important. I think that it is vitally important that those coming forward into Christian ministry, in a sense, reflect the way that society is. But it does have implications in terms of the vulnerability of those in Christian ministry. Because if, in a sense, there is more damage to this figure here, then when you put people into the situation of being subjected to the additional and sometimes, using Paul's phrases, almost overwhelming stresses that there are in Christian ministry, then this may push people into inability to cope. And those stresses, of course, illness, sometimes direct satanic oppression, financial hardship, particularly those who are in the faith missions, where the faith is exercised by the individual rather than the local church. Important thing to distinguish that. I know of one missionary working in France whose children became malnourished, living by faith. And we need to realise that that does sometimes happen. Marital and sexual problems emerge, and we saw that in our own experience and in the experience of others on the field in East Africa. The constant pressure of work, the expectations of others, the expectations of parents, interactions with parents, the problems of our children. We have normal children, normally annoying children, and difficult children as anybody else. Robbery and violence overseas particularly, but also in some areas of work in UK. Cross-cultural stress, not only for those moving backwards and forwards between overseas situations, but also for those moving backwards and forwards between situations in this country. If you're moving from Northern Ireland to Scotland, then you will be aware of problems in adjusting to a different cultural environment. And I think the other things are pretty self-explanatory. So if those are the stresses, in a sense, what are the sort of problems which we have seen over the past 6 years? We have seen about 12%, we think, who have had immature personality structures, and that's been the cause of their problems. A number with anxiety states, which in 2 or 3 has been post-traumatic stress disorder. Both of those involved light aircraft accidents. We've seen quite a number in stage 3 stress with reactive depression. And we've seen a few with endogenous depression or other psychotic illnesses, although we try and avoid those people ever being referred, because I'm not a psychiatrist,
and they should be under the care of psychiatrists, so we try and avoid that. We've seen a number with psychosexual disorders, and we've seen quite a number with bereavement reactions of one kind or another, and a few patients with what is termed hysterical conversion illness, where an inner conflict becomes erupts into physical symptomatology, often roving around various symptoms and therefore the patient moving from one specialist to another. And the problems that we have seen reflect what was in the study that we've just done at the Bible College. Interparental violence and severe quarrelling, divorce and separation, violence from parents, sexual abuse, deprivation of parental warmth, homosexual orientation, illicit sexual relationships and guilt about that, sexual dysfunction within marriage, and severe disharmony relating threatening marital stability, and lesser degrees of disharmony often related to inadequate communication and time, and quite a lot of work stress overload, people with poor time management, and in one or two the problem of those who seem to get into sustained combat with their sessions. Those of you who have difficult churches will understand that, but it is possible to get into an almost paranoid state sometimes with sessions or elderships. And then a few who've had problems with what one might call occult oppression, current dabbling, sometimes in association with depression, real depression, the inability or the lack of renunciation of past involvement in occult things or direct satanic oppression. So those are the sort of things that have come up in the patients that we have seen. I'd like to, whilst we're on that area, just to say a little bit more about bereavement reactions, because it seems to me that this is sometimes not fully appreciated in terms of the breadth of bereavement reactions. And this diagram is something that I've put together, so if you don't like it, then tell me afterwards. And it attempts to look at ourselves as people who derive our identity not only from our inner world, but also from our outer world as well. We derive a sense of identity from the people with whom we have contact, our family, our friends, our colleagues. We derive a sense of identity from our role and status. We derive a sense of identity from our place of residence, our home, our place of worship, our place of work. And in fact, if you look at people who are moving between one place and another, then you see exactly the same kind of bereavement responses as you do when people are bereaved of somebody who's been very close to them. So if you, for instance, take away people, as happens in movement between one place and another, you're going to lose not only that, but that. There are bereavement reactions and bereavement processes to work through. People who become unemployed are going to lose their role and their status, and that may elicit a fairly deep bereavement response, as it did for me when initially in our own work I moved from being a hospital specialist, if you like, to a different kind of role. Now, lastly, I'd just like to say a little bit about the problem areas of caring for the carers. Why is providing care for carers difficult? Now, these were, if anybody's feeling got at here, this was a list which was actually I put together from feedback from a Christian Leaders Conference which I was helping with a couple of years ago. So this is the feedback from ministers and Christian leaders. There are the problems of knowing it all, and rational knowledge of what our problems are may be a block to receiving real help from others. And that is often the case and has been the case. We've seen one or two people who've either done a certain amount of counselling themselves or have received it elsewhere, in whom they, in a sense, they've known it all and have been blocked from really moving on. Then there is the problem for those in Christian ministry of admitting need, and you can look at this both in terms of the halo effect and the halo affect. Congregations, I think particularly in Scotland, tend to have a place their ministers on a high pedestal, which I don't find to the same extent south of the border. I don't know whether that's true or not. But the minister is in a very exalted position, in a sense, with his congregation very often. And that cuts him off from actually receiving help. It may also have and start to become a part of his own functioning, so he develops the halo affect, that he, in a sense, is that exalted figure who is not needing the help of others. So there may be a problem of admitting need. Thirdly, there's the problem of confidentiality. And this is a significant issue, particularly where the problems that are being faced are of a highly sensitive nature, and particularly where they may have some effect on the ability of that person to continue in Christian ministry. And the problem here is that denominational structures seem to have a tendency to leak unless information, unless there are very specific safeguards actually built into that structure to make sure that it doesn't happen. But our experience has been that denominational structures do leak because there are conflicts of interest, particularly where these kind of sensitive issues come up. There may also be problems related to confidentiality where a pastor starts to share his personal problems within a team, and role conflict may also come into this within a team, and generally it's probably better that one doesn't actually get into a therapeutic relationship within a team, because particularly if the level of difficulties is quite deep and ingrained that person has, there may be other things starting to go on within the relationship which may fundamentally affect the stability of the team. So there is, in some instances, the need for safe islands of support outside of congregations for those in Christian ministry. And there are, of course, a variety of people, psychiatrists, who will make themselves available to pastors, counsellors who will make themselves available, some marriage guidance counsellors who see a particular role for them in providing help for those in Christian ministry with marital difficulties, and other organisations and so on. Then there may be problems with the ability to trust. Some pastors, partly sometimes as a result of the nature of the problem, may have a major problem in achieving a level of trust where a problem really can be talked through. And the nature of that problem may go back to the whole question of confidentiality, or it may be a short or long term learned reserve. If somebody's obviously been in a combat situation with their Kirk session or whatever, then there may have been a very high level of reserve started to creep in, which may make it very difficult to move into a situation of trust and really looking at the problems. Then there's the problem of whether or not there is real commitment to growth. I have to say that our experience has been that some of those who hold very firmly to what one might term evangelical theology have no real commitment to their own growth within that framework and are very happy to put over dogmatics and to preach apparently from the heart, but have no real commitment to their own growth in relationships with other people. And one finds folk like this from time to time who get into a pulpit and can preach very powerfully, but when it comes to real personal relationships, their relationships with their wives, other people in the congregation, there's a great distance there. And lastly, there's the question of the range of skills which is going to be needed for somebody in seeking to have help as somebody in pastoral ministry. And we all need friends, and some pastors forget that, and of course that's in itself a difficult issue sometimes within congregations, whether you can really have a friend within that congregation without appearing to favour one and not the other. Quite a lot of us from time to time will need some kind of counselling or psychotherapy. We may need somebody who will act in the position of a spiritual director. And increasingly, as people in pastoral ministry are taking on counselling roles as part of that, and we've had a look this morning at the dilemmas that are involved, but the fact is that it is happening in congregation. We may need to look at the whole question of whether we need somebody who will act as a supervisor, not in terms of telling us what to do, but helping us to unravel what is going on in our therapeutic relationships. And that's something that certainly my wife and I have been seeking to strengthen over the last few months, realising that our own arrangements on this particular score were inadequate. Lastly, as I move into 1 minute over time, just to relate this back to our relationship with God. In growth, this, it seems to me, is what we are seeking. That we are seeking growth. This actually was taken from material given to us. It's not original in any way. At a marriage enrichment seminar, which my wife and I have been on 3 times, we needed it. In the centre is the Lord. And as we experience acceptance, then we can learn to trust, can grow, feel able to make further risk in self-disclosure to others. And in this regard, I'll quote Carl Rogers, humanist though he was. I have found that the very feeling which seemed to me to be the most private, most personal, and hence most incomprehensible by others has turned out to be an expression for which there is a resonance in many other people. It has led me to believe that what is most personal and unique in each one of us is probably the very element which, if it were shared or expressed, would speak most deeply to others. And the problem, of course, is that some of us have got into the situation where the opposite of that has occurred, and where there has been rejection and fear and barriers have built up. So my prayer in finishing off this particular session is that that cycle, in a sense, of growth would be what is happening for each one of us. Thank you very much.